Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it is another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you in studio once again.
Thank you.
Hey, we recently went through your estate planning life cycle in an 8-part series, and you want to kind of drill down a little bit more on the process of that, and what this means from the customer's perspective if they were come to you and use your services.
Yeah, so building clear expectations is a very important part of relationship. And we can talk about expectations and relationship all day long, but it really is a driving force of when someone walks into the office, they have certain expectations already developed, that they're sitting down and meeting with an estate planner. They're meeting with an attorney. There's expectations that have already been imposed upon me, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, because we all have unique experiences of this thing called estate planning, and we all have experiences of what we think attorneys should be like, or what attorneys should act like, dress like, et cetera, et cetera. So expectations are a critical component of actually having a very successful experience, really in any facet of our relationship life. So whether it's with a pastor, if you have expectations and those are not met because they have a different theological viewpoint than you, then your expectations are going to possibly push against that relationship or not accept what is being stated the next time. In marriage, if I don't meet my wife's expectations or if she does not meet my expectations, that's where the beginning part of conflict can happen. That's where relationship can begin to break down. Communication becomes more difficult if we don't meet proper expectations. So it doesn't matter what relationship we talk about. It all is set up and predicated upon, do we have proper expectations of each other? And in the estate planning world, what I have found is that because most traditional estate planning attorneys are in a document mentality, their process is simply, let's get a document done. And because clients are also in a similar mentality, is I got to go get this thing done. I got to get the documents done. I have to do my good deed of getting an estate plan. Then their expectations are set up and predicated upon that point of view as they walk into the office to sit down with any estate planner. So I thought I wanted to take a little bit of time and sit down with the listening audience to say, well, what expectations should you really have? What expectations, when you walk into any attorney office, should you have as a starting point to determine whether or not that is going to be a good relationship for you and your family? And that includes walking into my law firm, which is you should have certain expectations. But if I have a client walk in and their expectations are A, B, C, and my process is D, E, F, well, that's a recipe for failure because our expectations haven't met my process and vice versa. So really aligning expectations is what this discussion is going to be about. So yes, we did just talk about the life cycle, but we're not done. We need to take it from a different viewpoint today and really pull apart, what does it mean to have an estate planning life cycle, and what does that do in client experience? And also, to be quite honest, in my experience with the clients. Mm-hmm. So it works both ways in relationship.
Well, the estate planning life cycle has 8 stages, but you say the very foundational part of it is obviously step one, the exploration and education step. Why is this so important to the process?
Well, the education and exploration is a critical part, maybe even one of the most important parts. What I've found is that I have different, I guess, stages that clients are at when they walk in to begin this journey called estate planning. Some people have never really had any experience with estate planning. So therefore, they're, for lack of better terminology, just an open book. They are ready to really be blended into any process that I may or may not have. So that might be the more or the easiest type of client to walk in the door. Someone with really no expectations, a clean slate to say, I don't know what I don't know, so I'm expecting you to guide me through the process. Others may have had an experience in estate planning specifically because they have either closed an estate specifically, and usually they've closed their parents' estate one way or another. So they've walked through probate, or, oh, my parents had a trust and it was a disaster, or it was a great success. My parents had a will and I had to go through probate. That was a disaster, or, oh, that was easier than I expected. And each experience then determines what expectation a client walks into the office with, because we're very experiential individuals. Mm. That's how we live life. Mm-hmm. And that builds what we now expect for future when we experience something. So, and then I have clients that oftentimes have already gone out and done research, have talked to other people, and have already looked through what does it mean to have a will, what does it mean to have a trust. So I get clients across the spectrum of what are they walking in and what's their experience like. So right out of the gate, in order to have a strong process, we have to deal with getting everybody onto the same expectation. Mm. And that's why the exploration and education stage is such an important part of this puzzle, of this cycle. If I don't have an opportunity to then get everyone on the same page, in other words, this is what a will does. So as an example, most people think that just having a will is almost like a magic wand, that somehow, some way, because I've done this drill of estate planning, that everything is now okay. Well, that's not a good expectation. That's actually a false expectation, that somehow the document itself is going to rescue you, regardless of what tool you use. Because we can use a will or we can use a trust. That's a simple, those are the two major tools that I have. It doesn't get any more simplistic than those two tools. Mm-hmm. Now, inside of each of those tools is complexity, and there are certain rules and there are certain things that need to happen. But the document itself is just a tool. See, I can have a hammer, I can have a saw, I can have a screwdriver, I can have multiple other tools in my shed. But if I don't go and actually pick that tool up and use it as it was designed, then that tool is pretty useless. As a matter of fact, it's going to start getting rusty sitting out in my tool shed. So the tool has to be properly implemented and designed. Then it has to be properly handled and used. If we don't have both of those utilized, then we have a broken system. Mm. So just doing the tool, and let's make the assumption, even though it's an unfortunately false presumption, that the document was done at a very high level and it was done legally proper and done legally well. Again, if you do not have somebody who can then pick up the tool and use it at the time that it is designed to be used, then the tool is simply just a tool still. Hmm. It hasn't actually been used for its specific purpose. So therefore, in estate planning, I think that there is a unfortunate thought process that just by doing the act of estate planning, by just having the documents, that somehow that alone is going to save the day, or that alone is such a good deed that now I am fine. Mm. And unfortunately, that's not the case. So in the exploration and education component of the process, we need to talk more in depth about each of these tools, what they accomplish. And then not only the tools, but how do we actually implement them? Because without implementation, the tool, again, is just a tool. whether it was properly created or whether it's defective, the tool will just sit there without proper ability to be used. So the exploration in education is really the first opportunity that I have to bring everyone's mentality into alignment to say, this is what the process is going to be like. And this now gives a clear picture of what your expectations should begin to look like. Whether you had no expectations, whether you had expectations upon experience, or whether you had expectations based upon education and research. The objective of the first step is we got to get everyone's expectations aligned, because without proper expectations, it's very, very difficult to have a good relationship. And if clients are not going to walk in and trust the attorney to be able to walk them through the whole process, then we're already off on the wrong foot. We're already starting the relationship behind the eight ball, and that's not a good place to have a relationship. And in actuality, the relationship eventually is going to break down, and it's going to be unfortunate. So my goal in having this life cycle is to bring clarity of expectation to clients so that we understand the journey we're going to take together. Clear and proper expectations of what I'm going to do and what the client is going to do, because the client is going to have to work in the process to build the tool properly, and then also to manage the tool thereafter. We have to have clear expectations for each other to have a successful relationship. That's what we're trying to promote. And really, the educational component, exploring what a family needs, exploring what the right tool for them is going to be, that is one of the most critical steps so that we leave the gate proper and we're going to have a great relationship and success will be had in estate planning.
Well, I can see how that step one is very foundational to your process, the process of estate planning and the life cycle, discussing that this week with Paul Grant. People are intrigued. They want to know more about your services. How do they get in touch with you?
Well, our website is the best resource. Go over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts. There's upcoming educational workshops. And there's ways to communicate with us. So you can find all of that information and more at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memoriesworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memoriesworthtelling.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week, Paul is going through the process that he uses in estate planning life cycle. And I'm curious, Paul, do other attorneys follow the same kind of course, or what is your experience there?
Yeah, what I have heard from other clients, because I have not sat down with too many other attorneys. I actually have sat down with several. And unfortunately, from what I hear, is that most attorneys do not have a strong process that they have developed for client expectation. Now, because a traditional estate planning attorney is in the mode of I need to create a document, the process that they have is to be successful in creating the document. Not necessarily a process so that the client is successful. Hmm. And in my opinion, those are two very different viewpoints, which is if I sit down and look through the lens of a client's experience to say what is going to be the best thing for the individual when they're with me, that is a different viewpoint than me leading with what is in my best interest. How do I create a document faster, more efficiently? How do I cut down the costs? So, yes, there's always process behind things, but I'm concerned from what I have heard and from what my clients have experienced that there's not many attorneys that actually take the time to sit down through the client's perspective and actually map out what is the client's journey going to be like instead of what is the attorney or what is the office experience going to be like. I think that there's very strong process in each individual office. How do we get to the right conclusion? But I'm not so convinced that it's been from the viewpoint of what is in the best interest of the client long term in this journey called estate planning. How do we keep informed? How do we keep updated? How do we make the client expectation match each other? So even from the very first step of we come in and we educate and we explore whether this is going to be the proper relationship, in my system, that takes 90 to 120 minutes. That's not just I'll give you 30 minutes without charge and halfway through, I'm already jotting down notes to build your estate plan. That's, I think, the most common experience that other people have told me about. Mm. So without proper process, without proper vision for the client, then really we're left with how do I get the document out as expediently as possible? I'm concerned that most traditional estate planners are more concerned about the document production than they are about the client experience.
Well, and you've said in other shows, too, that so often they're just all working from the same template.
That is
true. And they use templates, and they just want to get you out the door with kind of a standard document, and everybody, one size fits all, and
yeah.
It really isn't that way.
Yeah, and a lot of things have moved to software, which is great. I use software. It's expected nowadays. I'm not sitting there on a typewriter like they would have in the 80s when I was growing up. So things have already become more expedient for each law firm. But even when I use programming, I can pre-design things and just say, okay, this is for every client and I'm done. Instead of taking the time to go through and handcraft and make sure that it's a unique experience and that it fits each and every family as they have communicated. So yes, it takes more time. It takes more effort to actually look at the client's perspective and ensure that indeed that's what's being lifted up. That's what is the most important. And then I'll build my internal process around that client experience instead of vice versa.
Okay, well, that kind of moves into then the process of engaging and creating a document that works for the client. So what's the process there?
So when we have clear expectations that we can be on the same page, then it's time to move forward. So we get on the calendar. We have a couple different sessions. The first session, we talk about how do I protect the client individually? So we need powers of attorney. Doesn't matter if we use a will or if we use a trust. We always need proper documentation for financial power of attorney, healthcare powers of attorney, end-of-life documents, mental health powers of attorney. The list goes on. So each document needs to be properly designed, and there's a lot of questions involved in there. One of the questions that surprises a lot of people that that I'm not so sure is asked all that often, which is as believers, as Christ followers, I believe that many of us are very generous in how we manage our finances and that we want to see the gospel move forward. We want the gospel to be proclaimed, and we understand that money is really the one of the few ways that we can make the gospel go forward. We have to have money behind every church. We have to have money behind every missionary. Well, if you experienced a disability, meaning you need assistance during your lifetime, you need to have someone else step in and manage and pay your finances, pay your bills, work with your financial advisor, do your taxes. Well, at that point in time, would you want for the generosity that you have demonstrated in your financial life to continue? And that's a hard question for some people. There's two sides of that discussion, which is number one, I've always been generous. I've been called to a life of generosity. And so therefore, I'm going to go ahead and empower who is going to assist, pay my bills and have and be able to manage my finances. I'm going to empower that person to continually be generous. Now, some people say, well, I only want that to happen with the tithe because tithing is a biblical principle. So therefore, I want my tithe to continue on anything that comes in. But to all other generosity, I want to stop. Or no, I want these missionaries to continue to be supported because if I stop, that's going to harm them and I don't want that to stop. So we have to think through where do we land on generosity should someone else be managing our money? Now, other people may look at generosity and say, but in order for me to be generous, I need to attach my faith to the generosity. And so therefore, if I cannot be generous individually, if it's not coming from me as an individual, then I'm not so sure it's generosity anymore. And so therefore, I'm not going to empower someone else to use my money and continue the generosity that I would have shown should I be in charge of my money. Now, I'm not saying that there's a right answer or wrong answer in that. I'm just saying we need to explore that question. And I don't think that question is asked. But yet, for believers, for followers of Christ, it's an important question that we need to know. Mm-hmm. What do we want generosity to look like? So there's an example of what we do in the first session. The second session, then, is what happens if you are married, what happens if the first spouse dies and we have a surviving spouse? Because statistically, it's very, very small that spouses die at the same time. So we're always going to be left, not always, but an extraordinary high percentage of the time we're going to be left with a surviving spouse. How do we care for them? How do we make sure that everything is well designed for that and to accomplish tax objectives if necessary? Do we support someone else? Do you have a special needs adult child that you are supporting? How does that work into the picture? And then when the second spouse dies, how do we leave wealth and what does it look like? So those are the sessions and they're detailed. We need to ask a lot of questions. My job is to bring out issues and questions and concerns that people don't naturally think of because I do this every day. So in the engagement, it's more than having just a few questions to fill in the document. It's more about what picture does the client have when they need to be taken care of. If you've reached the age of 65, then you will have a 75% chance that at one time or another, you are going to need assistance during your lifetime. So you have a 75% chance of needing someone else to manage your finances, whether for a short period of time or a long period of time. That's a very high percentage, and so we better be prepared for it. Counseling, what you receive from your attorney, better address that in a more than rudimentary or mundane way. So we need to have a full discussion, such as the generosity question that I mentioned, and multiple other things that align with that, to make sure that you are going to be well taken care of. So so really, after we have educated and explored, we need to engage and create, and there is a specific process, and that's why clients, I believe, experience something different in the process we've created, because we've taken it from the client perspective first, we've built the firm process around that client experience instead of what's the most efficient way to get things out the door from the firm perspective and then forcing the client into that process. We've actually designed it in reverse to ensure that the client experience is excellent, that it's a high level, that we can have sufficient time to have the conversation. So all of this is necessary, but if you don't have a good process, then administratively, a firm is going to struggle. Then we get to the wrong conclusion for clients because we're more focused on how does it influence the firm instead of how does it influence the client. The process of any firm is their greatest limitation. And so actually asking questions about what does the process look like if they do not offer it to you is an important question, and it is good and okay to ask these questions of an attorney because that will give you insight to what the attorney's objective and what their perspective is. Is it about you or is it about their process? And really, the unique program and the unique process, all of this is a culmination so that our expectations can be aligned, so that we can have a great relationship as we walk through this journey. And that really will create not just a good satisfaction from the client perspective, but it will actually create far better documents so that you know how to use the documents and the tool is not just sitting out in the shed rusting away.
Well, going over the process that they use at Planning with Purpose, the law offices of Paul Grant, and how he approaches the estate planning life cycle this week. If people are intrigued and want to know more, how do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and you can continue with this series on the life cycle of estate planning.
It is the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.